Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the TMGS. It's the Michael Gay Show, broadcasting live from the ATL Saturday, and today is Saturday the 27th. Oh my goodness, I just looked at the board here and realized there's this one little error here I need to correct, so let me take care of that now. Saturday the 27th, 2021. The time is now 6:04 p.m. on the East Coast, and it's 3:04 p.m. on the West Coast. And welcome to the show, you guys. We have a special guest that's going to join us at about the half-hour mark. I take that back, 15 minutes, right? Yeah, 6:15. Mr. Time and Ship, author, comedian, actor. He has a new book out called My East St. Louis. Now, I'm going to tell you guys, I just ran into the house, literally. Just ran into the house. One thing I do like about this board is that the intro songs that you have, you can program for them to start, right, before your show. So I come in and I log into the board and I'm listening, and hopefully you guys were hearing the intro, so it gave me a couple of minutes there. So the intro song is called Conversation Piece, written by Mr. Joe Foxworth, former member of the Motown recording group Ozone, and coming soon. The members of Ozone, the former members, and even the recent ones, Mr. Charlie Glenn, are going to join us. So that should be a lot of fun. They've been with us before in the past, and a lot of fun talking to these guys. They're awesome. Still unbelievable musicians. And Joe, thank you so much for the piece. Conversation Piece is the name of it. Later on the show, we're going to get into one of the Ozone hits you probably recall. So let me go ahead and open up the mics. And right now, I'm going to open up the mic of the lady of the house, Miss Janet Davis. How you doing, Janet? Happy Saturday to you. Are
hey,
you there?
I'm sorry. I had to take you off. I had to come off mute. Happy Saturday to you too, Michael. It's been a rough day. It's been real busy. Yeah.
Who are you telling?
But you doing okay?
I'm hanging in here. It's been an interesting thing because, as some of y'all know, I'm doing some relocating type things and a lot of stuff was popping up. But I just looked at where I made an error here on the board. But I guess I can edit that later on. I had February 27th when it should not have been that. So I'm going ahead and going to clear that up. But, yeah, time.
No, I'm not the only one.
Yeah. So, no, you're not
hey,
the
look,
only
I sent you. I just want to tell you, I sent you something. So, you know, glance at it, you know, what we just
okay,
talked about.
I sure will. I sure will. I'll take a look at that now as we're speaking. And as I said to all of you guys, and oh, wait a minute, here's something I need to do. See, that's what happens when you get behind schedule. You start forgetting things that you should have taken care of earlier, but I had so much going on. I got to open up the chat room. So all of you who are listening, and if you're listening on the internet, let me let you know it's for the ones who don't know, it's www.blogtalkradio.com/TMGF. That's www.blogtalkradio/TMGS. And it only takes a moment. It don't take long for you to jump into the chat room. You're not the type of person who likes to talk on the air. You know, a lot of folks are kind of like, oh, I don't want to talk. I sound funny on the radio. If you've never been on the radio, then how do you know how you sound? So anyway, just go ahead and call into the show, but if you don't feel comfortable, go to the chat room, which I'm about to open up right now, and you can post your questions or comments there. So without further ado, you know I always got to keep the law around.
Amen.
For you folks to know how we do this. So I'm going to open up the mic to Officer Crenshaw. What's up, my brother?
Hey, Crenshaw. What's going on? How you doing, Janet?
Great. How are you?
I'm good. Mike,
you
say
don't
right?
sound like you're excited over a Saturday. I mean, it's beautiful outside. I mean, there is pollen in the air. This is the South, where the pollen is just ridiculous here. Go ahead though. But I'm like you don't sound like you had a busy day already.
Who, me?
Yeah, you.
Oh. Yeah, it was busy. It was busy, but the pollen is what's killing everybody. It's got me down, too. Mm-hmm.
It's bad. And for some of you folks who don't experience pollen, now that's something that I had to understand and learn when I first moved here to Georgia from California. California has smog, and you could go up to the – in fact, you didn't have to go to the mountains. You can just go to the top of a hill and just see the layers of smog. Here in Georgia, you ain't got to go to the top of the hill. Just walk outside of your house and look at where everything is yellow. Everything is yellow.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And that yellow bullshit is getting in your nose and is making your eyes water and, you know, you sneeze and everything. Yeah, pollen is really bad. And it's getting worse, right? Fortunately, we had some rain a few days ago, and a lot of folks be like, I'll be glad when it stopped raining. No, don't be glad it stopped raining. Let it rain.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Let it rain. It washes the pollen away. You know? You got to take the good and the bad, right?
It's
well, Mike, you say instructions to get in the house.
Say that again?
You said you were rushing to get in the house. So I'm
I was rushing.
Oh,
right. I was out and about, and I was rushing to get home so I can get the show started. And as I said, normally I have to, let's say, for instance, if I did a rebroadcast or whatever, I still got to call in to activate the rebroadcast, right? But fortunately with Blog Talk, I can actually program a song to play. Even if I you know, just program a song that where this is your intro song, yes. So that's what I did. I forgot I did that. And when I come home, I'm logging in, you know, because I got to put in the passcode and this, that, and the other. And all of a sudden, it's like, seems like you're already, this is, you know, this is what gets me, this little voice. Seems like you're already in a live show. And I'm like, really? Because the program, it's starting to play the song. Now, what happens after the song don't matter at that point. It's like, okay, we played your song. Now you need to be talking, right? So I'm glad I did that. I don't have to set up the board of where, you know, I have to call in to get the show started. They started for me. So, yeah, right at 6 o'clock is when it happened. So, without further ado, again, welcome to the TMDS, to the Michael Gay Show here on this Saturday, March the 27th. Wow, we're already into the third month of the year. Nine more to go. Time truly flies. And
yes,
look at all the stuff that has happened since the beginning of the year. And you guys, we're going to go into it into the second hour because I decided normally I would have our guests, our special guests on in the second hour, right? But I decided to go ahead and switch it up this time. You know, sometimes you have to change things and have our special guest first because he's very much an incredible individual, author, comedian, and also actor. Hyman Shipp is going to be joining us momentarily. And I asked him, can you, because I know he's busy. He normally chimes in and joins us in the first hour, but now we're promoting his new book. So once he pops up on the board, we'll open up his mic and get into the conversation called My East St. Louis. So that's going to be interesting. I had a chance to read some of the excerpts of it, and it's funny. And it's real. There's a lot of stuff in this that it's not just comedy, but it's just the actual things that I think many of us can relate to growing up, not necessarily in St. Louis, anywhere. Some of the stories he shares, I'm like, damn, I went through that when I lived in California as a kid. You're right. You're on point. You know what I'm saying? It just hits you. It's like, wow, a lot of us really experienced that. So we're going to get into that conversation. And so we're waiting for him on the board. Let's see. And I got to remember, he's an 818, so he's not up yet. So he should be here within a minute. All right. So without further ado, just burning a little bit of time as we get ready for our guest to join us. We got to get into this. Sure.
Did you get
go right in. Yes, I did. Did you get yours?
Hallelujah. No.
You did?
No. Along with a lot of other people. I don't know what the heck going on.
Yes, I did. I did get my stimulus check. Officer Crenshaw, did you get yours?
Yes.
See?
Okay, great.
And I'm a senior. I'm supposed to be getting mine first.
I didn't see them write that down, but okay, I don't know.
I think because they were letting the seniors get the shots first, they pushed the check a little back.
Oh, okay. That could have been.
It's not right, but that's probably what they did.
Well, I have a lot of people calling me, asking me to check to see if their check is there any information. And so far, it's been the same thing. You know, three generic questions saying it might be there, they might be working on it, or you might need more information, you know, the basics. And it's crazy, you know, but they said only check once a day, even though people have been blowing the phone up.
Yeah, that has been happening. All right, so now I'm looking at the board, and I see our guest is here. Unfortunately, due to corona, I keep telling you guys every week, I can't have the studio audience like we normally would do. But please, put your hands together, and welcome to the show, Mr. Timon Shipp. Hello, Timon. What's up, my brother?
Hey, hey, hey.
How are you?
Hey. Whoop, whoop,
my
whoop,
people,
whoop.
My people. How you doing? You know, I heard y'all,
my brother.
Y'all my check too. I sure did. Go and get my second shot tomorrow. That's right.
I got my second shot, and it caused me to have flu-like symptoms for a couple of days. But at least I know I'm protected.
Yeah, that's what it's about. I mean, it's affecting people differently. They had some 90-year-olds that got their second shot. They had no symptoms whatsoever. They just went, you know, so it just depends. It affects people differently, yeah.
Right.
I want to go into that. I want us to go into and I'm sorry to interrupt you, Janet, mm-hmm. but I want to go into that because I think that that's something that's going to tie into our second hour and towards the end of this conversation. Because I was just talking to some folks who said, I had my shot. And some folks who said, I'm going to get my shot. Or, in fact, I had a person said, well, my wife got a shot, and she was sick for a whole day, and then all of a sudden the next day it was done. It was over with. So that's something we need to definitely get into. First and foremost, let's talk to our guests about the new book, My East St. Louis. Man, I read that book twice, actually. I had to, because I was like, well, wait a minute. This story here, I can relate to. This story here, oh, my God, I can visualize it. Wow. Not just in the point of what you wrote as far as yourself. And I mean, I'm visualizing your family, you know, and your brothers and your sisters and everything, doing all the stuff that you share in the book. But it took me back to growing up in my Los Angeles, right? So we can all, you know, really relate to a lot of the stories, even though it's your experience, but we've had the same thing. Let us know, first and foremost, what made you decide to write this? Because without even saying, it's a story about your growing up, but what made you say, okay, I want to write this book and share it to the public?
Well, it started out as a one-man show, and during my friends and I, promoting my script for my drama, going into these different weeks, I said, you know what, I need to put some. I could do something with these stories, and I'd written them out and everything. I had them edited, and then I put a game plan together, and I said to myself, okay, I'll make it a book of short stories, because it was in the one man show. All the stories you read, I would act out those characters. It was an hour and 25. I would be soaked in sweat from performing all the characters, everybody, you know. And so I took those and I said, hey, you know, I had read the book by Tim Ferriss called The 4-Hour Workweek. And book basically breaks down. You find the people to do the things you need done. And I went online on Upwork, and I found these two sisters. One sister, I needed someone who understood growing up in East St. Louis, Illinois. And this one girl, her name was Erica Harris, and she was my editor. And she was from Gary, Indiana. Well, Gary, Indiana is basically just like East St. Louis, Illinois. And so she wrote me I asked her to write me a foreword and to edit. Girl did a beautiful job. I was intrigued by her because she was a philosopher. I mean, her degree was in philosophy. And this sister was just bad. And she was staying in Belize as she was doing this. And then I got a sister out of Atlanta. I think she was out of Georgia, I know. She did my formatting and did the cover for the book. And next thing you know, that sister helped me put it on Amazon. And I was on my way. But I did it. I said, hey, if I can find the right people to help me put this together, I mean, you know. And I also had a guy who was a school teacher. He was a former school teacher, a Jewish man, who read my synopsis. And he said, Ty, the day you get this ready and you turn the book, I'll buy your first copy. So if you went on Amazon and looked at my reviews, this guy, Ira, was the first that long review on there. He did it.
I saw
and
that.
And said, yeah, I mean, it was, and he pushed, and we were off to the races. You know, we were. I was intrigued, you know, of doing it. And then I said to myself, I like to see this turned into a sitcom. So right now I have two people, beautiful black folks who are turning my book into a sitcom.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's how we put that together.
And also,
together.
You guys, keep in mind, it's available on Amazon, and you can also purchase it on, what is the other one called? Not just Amazon.
Goodread. You can get it on Goodread, which is also Goodread.com.
And Kindle.
You can get on Kindle.
Right.
Right.
So if you don't want to buy the book physically and turn pages, you can still read it on Kindle. Still buy it, though. All
right.
And it is.
So many people. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
So many people from my job and every place, you know, they said, "Ship, these stories are so rich. I totally get them." You know, one woman told me whenever she's having a bad day at work, she pulled my book out and started reading my stories. And she said, you know, brightens my day because they grew up like that and they relate and it's funny. And these stories are all worked out on stage because of the way they're written. And that's why I told my editor, I said, please don't touch the words. Leave them, but make sure the quotations are correct. And that's what she did, because that's how those people talk in that town. You wanted to keep it as authentic as possible.
As possible, right.
Yeah.
That is very true. And I found that out because that's how I said I had to read it twice, you know. And not because I'm not – okay, don't take it wrong, you guys, when I say I had to read it twice, because I had to go back and be like, oh, wait a minute. Because you're writing it in the dialogue or the dialect, I should say, that people would speak.
Uh-huh.
And that's true.
Right.
The way that – people would talk during that time or in certain situations, how some things are done. Now, what I really liked was the characters. Are these fictitious? Did you use some real names? I think your family did. Did you use the actual names?
Like Lena May, that's her actual name. I just didn't put her last name down. But that's her name.
Okay.
The family members, like Cousin Bug, that was what they called her, Cousin Bug. You know,
right.
And Cousin Bug is interesting, is because she did, you know, she was, you know, as I say in the book, she did drugs, but she was called a legend because these drug dealers grabbed her and threw her in the back of a trunk and took her to in the middle of the night, took her to the McKinley Bridge. And if you know anything about St. Louis, Missouri, and East St. Louis, Illinois, the McKinley Bridge, the Illinois state line, sits right in the middle of that bridge. And so up under that bridge is the mighty Mississippi River. And my cousin Bug was always high. You know, even when my dad had passed and we went to see her, she saw me, "Time, give me $2. I said, "Time, why you always saying we drug it?" I said, "You want money for drugs, right?" "Well, yeah, I do." Then why you worried about me calling you a drug addict? You know, because that's what you're doing. And we went, and so, you know, when they grabbed her, because these drug dealers said they owed some money, they took her to that bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a tiny woman. She was only about 5 feet tall. You know, used to be a background singer at one time, but ended up getting into drugs and stuff. And they grabbed Bugs and threw her off that bridge in the middle of the night into the Mississippi River, into the river. She hit the water, boosh, came up swimming. Swam all the way to the other side, Mike, came walking up out the water, went over to a telephone booth and called a girlfriend. They said, girl, where you at? "Oh, girl, these damn fools threw my ass off this bridge. Can you come get me?" And so the next day, you know, the guy calls the drug dealer. "Hey, man, did y'all take care of Bug?" "Oh, yeah, we got ass last night." He said, "No, you didn't. I just saw you walking into the store to get some cigarettes. You better get down here." And they saw her walking across the street. And the dude said, "Run over, man, run over." He said, "No, bro, if I couldn't kill her ass from throwing off that bridge, I ain't going to mess my car." And they left alone. Now, that story was told to me by relatives as well as my family. So that's why that story is in there, because she is so – but she was, you know, and maybe because she was high is the reason why she didn't die. But the fact that she hit that water came up with it, you know.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
That adrenaline was flowing, right. That adrenaline was gone.
Right.
And kept her alive to survive that drop, because I've never been thrown off a bridge. I don't know, but they say it's like hitting concrete, depending on how high you're up, right, into
but
water.
But you can imagine how high that bridge was going over the mighty Mississippi mm-hmm. River, right by the arch.
Right.
You know, so, and also, you know, Mike, when I look at, you know, and those people that don't know the history of East St. Louis, Illinois, it was deindustrialized. Back then, East St. Louis, Illinois, was the fourth largest city in Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of your they had the riots of 1917 in East St. Louis, Illinois. Everything, as we've talked, as I said, as what we're dealing with right now with the voting and all that, this was all about economic jealousy, and it was going on even back then. Black people were thriving, and black folks. I mean, and white people were bothered by it, you know, because that's
and
why they didn't
were, right, and black people were leaving the South, coming to, but correct me if I'm wrong, black people were leaving the South, going to, like, St.
Exactly.
Louis, you know, to
right.
Get away, going to the North to get away from the Southern wealth, as we all
right.
know. But,
and
right.
then, but the racism followed, because people don't know, Illinois is a very segregated state. Remember, the South, I mean, the Midwest is basically the South. People don't, I mean, you know, that's because remember, like you said, everybody migrated from the South. Everybody's parents was either from, either you went to, you know, St. Louis,
mm-hmm.
or you went to Chicago, or you went to New York, or you went to California, you know, but they got
mm-hmm.
up out of there. And actually, the first state was actually the state of Kansas, is where a lot of black people started going. And then, you know,
mm-hmm.
On through to Oklahoma and all those places. And that's why I mentioned a little bit about that, because we had, you know, all the blues and the jazz. You had Tina Turner, Miles Davis. All those guys came up through. He said Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. Gertrude Ma Rainey was the mother of the blues. Betsy Smith. They all came up through from the South up through East St. Louis, Illinois, which at one time was a very prominent city. But when they moved out, when all the white folks left and all those major companies like Price Vista and the slaughterhouses and, you know, the big train, all that stuff left, and they left all those chemical plants and stuff. So we used to play in that stuff. We didn't even know it back then.
Wow.
You know, we didn't know. And that's why I mentioned, you know, when we talk about white flight, you know, I put in there about grade school. Because I watched from first grade to the fourth grade, watched my school go from predominantly white and eating great food. You know, I mean, we ate good as long as we went to school with white kids. I mean, we was getting fresh fruit, fresh milk, and man, and then white women say, "You're just a cute little black boy. You're just so cute." But I said, "Ma'am, I'll be all the food you want. Just keep filling my plate up with that French toast and that sausage." And we remember when the last white boy was at our school. We said to him, "Man, please don't go. Long hair, bro. We good. Don't
please
leave,
don't go, because you're gonna cut off our. You're gonna cut it all off, huh?"
Right, man. And Mike, and I talk about this in the book. What showed up when the last white boy was at our school and he left, my school was all black. Black teachers, black principal, black. It was a black city, and it. You know, we our food went from sour milk to burnt fish and, you know, white beans and cornbread. And, you know, kids started bringing their own lunch, you know, because you didn't want to eat that. Then, you know, we had government cheese week at the school. You know, kids would go in the bathroom and motivate each other in the bathroom. Just, "Hurry up, man. Almost there, bro." You know, trying to get that government cheese out your body. Or that old canned peanut butter that you couldn't spread over bread, so you just balled it up and ate like an apple. So, you know,
yeah,
you
I
had
know about
these.
That.
Hey, you know what I'm saying? I mean, and, you know, so that's – go ahead, Mike. Yeah.
We call
No, Janet had said that, but I want to go ahead and let Janet and Officer Crenshaw, and by the way, for any of you that are listening, in fact, I see some folks here on the board, if you have any questions or comments, please hit the number one to chime in and speak to our guest, Mr. Timemanship, author of the book called My East St. Louis. That's what we're talking to right now. So let me go to the lady of the house. I believe you had a comment, or do you have a question? Go right ahead.
Well, I have a comment, but I just want to say I experienced that peanut butter, and we used to call them choke sandwiches because you had to drink three or four little cups of milk in order to get it down because it would stick to the roof of your mouth.
Right.
Yeah, so I know. But you were talking about...
And you know, go ahead, Janet. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll wait. Go on.
No, I was just going to say that we use that old carnation milk that you took about five people to stir it to flush that down with the flush that. You know, that carnation milk, man. You know, that's what they were using, you know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You were mentioning the sitcom, you know, so it's in the works right now, the sitcom?
Yes, I have two writers that I'm working with right now who are working on turning it into a sitcom because there's so much material and you to transfer it from what I have, you know, to put it into a sitcom because of the stories and everything. And we're trying to also figure out the time period that we want to use. We're thinking early 70s, late 70s, because it was such a strong time period, music-wise.
Wow.
And, you know, that was that transition because, remember, civil rights was signed in 64, 65
right.
was the Voting Rights Act, 68, Martin Luther King died, and what else? We had 60, you had, you know, just, I don't know, that was right around the time, you know, we would, you had white flight going on, and there wasn't a lot of gentrification, but you saw neighborhoods changing,
right,
making these transitions and stuff, you know, and it was a tough time because black families were starting to break up at that time too. You had that, remember they were talking about what happened to the father. Well, if you think about it, by the early 70s, black father, you did have a lot more single family homes, but why is that? You know, whereas white people were able to get welfare and the white man could stay in the house, you know,
the black
woman got welfare, you told the brother he got to go.
And
you created this character like she was this evil woman that didn't want to work and had all these kids. But they remember, projects were made for white people. We didn't get projects. They did. They passed them down to us.
Yes, indeed. You know,
but now let me say this real quick, and I just want to chime in on this because I like what you just said. I mean, there was a couple of things that hit me while I'm listening to it of the 70s. Now, I grew up, and here's the things that were – I come a family of six kids, right? And my dad was always a hard worker and supported the family. What was an agreement is that my mom would take the girls. There was two girls, and there was four boys. Now, my mom had custody of all of us, right? But my parents made an agreement, well, you know what, between themselves, I'll take the boys, meaning that's what my dad did, because he wanted to raise the boys. I thought when I found that out that that was great because nowadays that probably wouldn't happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he decided – let me take the boys, you take the girls. Because he ain't going to be combing no hair and all that type of stuff, you know, that type of stuff. But the point I'm looking at is that where when you say as far as a sitcom, and don't get me wrong, I'm going to kind of like play the devil's advocate or whatever any other individual might perceive this whole thing of being. You know, back in the 70s and 80s, most of your television shows were shows about comedy, right? Comedy families and everything. Good Times, Jeffersons, where, you know, moving on up, we came from poor to, you know, we live in a deluxe apartment, not a house, but in a park, right?
Right?
Those type of shows. You know, and everything was, I remember looking at a TV guide. Remember TV guide?
Yep.
The little booklet thing. I remember going through it and looking at what was on the schedule for shows. It was either sitcoms or drama, or either sitcoms, drama, or crime shows.
Right.
That's basically what we saw back in those days. Now you got a lot of variety of stuff, right? So for someone who'd be like, okay, well, you know, based on what you're doing and everything, what would you say to them as far as they say, like, well, you're bringing up something from way back when. Now, I know why you're doing it. I mean, I understand it. But if someone were to come to you and be like, well, why would you want to share this, you know, in prime time or do a show, this, that, and the other, about back then being poor and coming up, what would you tell them?
Well, I would tell you, if you know the black experience and the black experience at that time, even though we lived in the ghetto, we had a lot of love. We went to church on Sundays. We had Sunday dinner. My mother, my mother was a quilter. My mother was a sewer. And that's when you had a sister who would go and work 8 hours, come home, cook meals. My mother had it was eight of us. I'm number seven of eight. So, and so not only could she sew, she could cook, she went to work. It was a blue-collar family struggling to survive, you know, in a time when, you know, times were tough. But we didn't know it as kids. All we knew was we got love, and we were surviving, even though, yes, we were the murder capital at that particular time. But what I'm showing is, because remember, comedy comes from tragedy. So there's going to be, this would be almost a dramedy. Because, yes, it's going on, but still, these people are surviving. Even on good times, you saw they had tough times, but, you know, there was still a comedy. So they had the serious side. Even if you watched the show The Rock, you know, remember the brother had that show called The Rock, and they had the drug dealer come by the house, and Rock end up snatching him in his collar. You know, you got all of those particular parameters, but also it was a time period. You know, if you if you are looking at, look at the show that they're doing right now, Snowfall. That's a time period piece. Talking about crack.
Right.
Talking about the whole crack epidemic and how it got started in L.A. And they started in that time period. You just saw Judas and the Black Messiah.
Right.
Okay, that's a time period piece. That's, and at that time, my sister and my former brother-in-law, he's passed on, but they were part of that movement. They had the afros and the black power, the leather jackets and everything. So it's you know, a time period, and there's also, those were different parents back then. See, those parents taught you survival skills. Okay.
Right.
If you wanted to, you know, if you knew, I mean, they taught you how to not only, you know, it was all about hygiene, you know, they taught you how to fill out a job application. They taught you, you know, how to sit down and get rid of your street slang. You can't go in talking about mom and them and we've been going down. My mother would make you change all that. And she said, when you get back home, you can talk back to your slang, you know, but she would teach you how to fill those things out and make sure you were prepared to go out into the world. She told you about the white man, but she didn't tell you to fear the white man. She told you what he was, you know, and how to.
I like the fact that you shared that part of it, because that is so true. Because, I mean, and as you speak, I'm visualizing what my parents would tell me. You called your like your aunt. You didn't say, "Hey, Mary," hey, Donna." You know, no, you said, you gave them their props. You said, hey, Aunt Mary, Uncle so-and-so. That's what we were taught. Okay. Now, me coming from California, I didn't know that. But my dad pulled me to the side and said, hey, son, you in the South. There's a way of respecting your elders. And then when he told me that and I started doing that, because, see, when I first started calling them by their first names, they would look at me like, poor boy, he don't know no better. You know, but he'll learn.
Right.
You know, and I did. And then you got more love and respect, you know, because you respected them. You
right.
know, you respected them. And they will be more helpful to you than what you could be to them, right? So,
right.
And I want to keep going like, with this, but I have to open up another mic. I got to open up another mic
okay.
real quick. Another co-host,
sure.
Cotton Campbell is on the board. How you doing, Cotton? Good evening and welcome.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, Cotton.
How you doing?
Hey.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, good. How are you?
I'm good.
You have a question or comment for Simon?
No. I sent a message and said I wouldn't be talking. I fractured my back.
Oh, okay, because you hit the number one. I guess you didn't mean to, but you hit the number one. That's how come I opened up your mind. But you did hit the number one.
I hit the one, so you know I was here. So you know I was here.
Oh,
okay.
I'm sorry about your back. Oh, yeah. Wow. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, sorry to hear that. Let me go over to Officer Crenshaw. You have any question or comment?
Well, I was just kind of, well, first of all, your book is in my Amazon cart. So I'm going to go in and beg for permission from my wife to buy it as soon as the show
okay.
is over. So I
okay.
Read. All right. Just a brief synopsis of it. Dude, we've been talking all this time, and I didn't know all this stuff about you. I feel privileged.
Well, thank you, Officer. Thank you, brother. I appreciate it. Thank you.
And I appreciate the fact of what you said earlier as far as, you know, the white people kind of passed the projects down to us.
Yes.
Which they did. We didn't start
right.
and develop them. Passed them down to
no.
us with limitations
right.
and stipulate when they gave it
right.
to us. So I'm sitting here listening. I'm enjoying this, and I'm like, well, damn. I looked at the two pictures that you have there, and I'm like, I've seen him on TV too. So it just kind of threw me for a loop.
Well, you know, to add to what you're saying, I was just on a podcast on Friday, and I had to drop knowledge on some white cats. And this dude would come to my cigar lounge that I would frequent. And he asked me, Ty, would you do my podcast? Man, this stuff you dropped. And this stuff I was dropping on him, he said, man, I didn't learn it. He didn't learn about Jim Crow. He didn't learn about the GI Bill. He didn't know about redlining. He didn't know about, the struggles of black people. And I said, man, we wanted the same thing y'all wanted. We wasn't trying to take nothing from it. I said, we just wanted
yeah.
to raise our kids and go to great schools and stuff. I mean, and do that. I said, but you don't understand the struggle of what my parents had to go through, how they had to make adjustments. I said, I had to drop them. They didn't know nothing about Black Wall Street. They didn't know about, I mean,
hello.
I just kept going down the line. I said, bro, where y'all been? Well, I didn't learn this in high school. They're just looking at me, you know, and we were on a Zoom. And they had no idea. And I said, man, I'm not pulling this out of my butt. This is stuff. He said, well, you're a well-read. I said, if you don't, you will be walking around in the cloud. I said, what do you think Black Lives Matter is all about? I said, don't get it twisted, man. These people ain't just out there walking because they feel like walking. They're tired of folks, you know, who wants to get shot in the back. And I had to let them know that I have a distant cousin. I don't know if you know about the lynchings of Marion, Indiana. But those lynchings, it was two, but the two that they lynched, one of them was my cousin, Thomas Shipp. I was told this by, there's a lot of Shipps on Facebook, and they said, man, that's our cousin. They were on their way home from work, and a white woman had stated that, she had been raped. And that's all it took. And they went and round up the local black folks. You know, and they were basically at that time, and this was in the early, I think, 40s, 50s, they were lynching black folks at least one to three a week. And I don't care what state you went to, you know. And this is in Indiana, okay? So we ain't even in the South, but you can call it the South because a lot of people migrated that way. Yeah. You know, and that's, you know, and it's so much history that is out there. And that's why in my book, the stories, one of my friends is from, he's from Argentina. I got a thrill of reading your book. But, dude, I thought I was going through something with this pandemic. Your life, I had no recollection that you guys had went through this. I did live this. Y'all got rats out of the basement after you ate a bowl of Fruit Loops? I said, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
My dad would come in there, Officer Crenshaw, with that hat cocked on his head, with that Salem cigarette hanging out his mouth, with that ass that don't fall off, but it's just right there to the edge, it won't fall off. And he would tell you, as soon as you Negroes get through eating that bowl of sugar, bring your ass downstairs. And, you know, and we like, man, do you know it's Saturday? What are you talking about? It's Saturday, man. Hell, boy. And, man, my brother James and I would get up, and we'd go downstairs, you know, and my dad be waiting. And he'd be standing there. He'd have a long pipe, and he had two shovels. He gave me a shovel, and he gave my brother a shovel. And he said, come on, boy. And he pushed that door open. And, Mike, when we walked in, all you saw was the biggest bull rats you could have ever seen in your life.
Everywhere.
Wow. Nothing but rats. And my dad was calm as a cucumber. Janet, he'd walk in there. He'd walk up to one of them rats, bye ya, bust him across his head, said, get him, boy. And you had to scoop him up and take him from the basement through the back door all the way through the backyard to the alley and throw him in the alley. By the time we were done, we had a pile of rats out back. So one time, my dad went to hit this one rat. Bam! And he just grazed him, right? And I scooped him up, and the rat started waking up. And when he woke up, he looked at me, which one of you fools hit me upside my head? I looked at my, it was him. I didn't do it, Mr. Rat. I'm sorry. I yelled out, daddy! Pow! And he hit him again, right? And the blood from the rat landed on my brand-new Chuck Taylor tennis shoes. I said, oh, man, are you serious? You done messed up my new I got rat blood on my Chuck. Get him, boy. This was starting to become a regular routine. So we decided we go get the neighbor's cat, Fifi, and throw her down there. They gunned her. She didn't last long.
What the
and my
hell
dad
did you
said,
say?
Which one? Huh?
No, I had to drop that in there. I had to put this in here real quick. But let's hear this part real quick.
What the hell did you just say?
What the hell did you just say?
They gutted our ass. I mean, Mike, they had it on display. My dad said, now, which one of you good, stupid Negroes put that damn cat down in there and them rats and tore it up? Because they had already kicked my dog's ass. I had a dog named Lassie. They kicked her butt and took her dog food. Shut up, damn it. Give me that dog food.
Yep, and they will. Rats will get into gangs, right? They will gang up on one cat or dog and be like, no,
right.
We're taking this shit.
But Mike, I mean, we used to dive off rooftops, Janet, onto statues of mattresses.
Mattresses, yeah.
So, I mean, we were fat out. We had a four-bedroom condemned home with you know, as our clubhouse with a swimming pool in the basement. You know, we swimming in gutter water. We didn't know. You know, we didn't know nothing. We were dumb. You know what I'm saying? No wonder we got so many beatings, you know.
No,
that's why we call our mother the Ayatollah Khomeini, which meant official ass beater. Yeah, my mother was, you know, even with all that. Yeah, even with all that, you know, the going to church and all that, that woman and all that she could do, it was still a lot about survival. Because when she started sewing, she experimented on us. So the first thing she made us, she made an announcement. I'm not buying y'all nothing else. Anything you get, I'm making it. Well, Mama, what are you making? Knickers. I said, Mama, black kids don't wear knickers. Your ass will, boy. I said, you remember the little pants with the little jacket, little bow tie, put that hat on your head? Gave you white shoes with black heels and a big gold buckle on the side. You know what they called me when I got to school? A black leprechaun. They said, teacher, why don't you let the little black leprechaun put the ABCs on the board? Now, you imagine going to a predominantly black school and they calling you a black man. They called me leprechaun. I came to school with a butter knife, threatening to stab all of them. They said, teacher, I said, mess with me now. And they called my mother, Miss Ship, can you come get the leprechaun? He done went crazy. I got a beating all the way home for that one. She said, boy, you could at least brought a sharp knife. What you going to do, spread butter all over?
Time is going to be anything, a pinch of what your book is like, then you got a gold mine going on. And I'm looking forward to when it finally airs because I'll be right there in front with my popcorn and drink watching it.
Yeah.
Looking like a little boy dressed up like Pat Boone.
Right. Now, I will give you the good thing that I have working for me is that the two writers that are working on the book, they're a married couple. And but the husband is from Kansas City, Missouri. So he know that life.
Mm-hmm.
And he's so, because she was from, she's a little bit younger than me, but she grew up in the Bay Area. You know, mm-hmm. they had it tough, but not like, you know, and I said, you know what, this would be able, if we could crisscross that, you know, it's always like when my family moved to Denver, Colorado, suburbia with the ghetto. You had to do that, and that's why I was able to go and do predominantly white rooms. I could go perform wherever I wanted because I had, you know, both sides. I knew how to go in and deal with, you know, and I would have, you know, black comedians asking me, how you making these white folks laugh, man? I said, you really want to know? He said, yeah. Mm-hmm. I said, I see people, you see color. You got to learn mm-hmm. that they got a life just like you. Okay, pull the color out and look at them as people. Mm-hmm. Bill Cosby did it for years.
That's right.
Bill came, yeah, he did it for years. Pryor did it for years. If you know that, you don't have to focus on the color. You focus on the subjects that you're writing about, and that's where reading and staying on top of you, that's how you're able to tell that particular story about it. And I used to talk about East St. Louis on cruise ships, and everybody would be right there. Because of what mm-hmm. you're talking about, the experience, I wouldn't say to them, well, you won't get me because I'm black and you wouldn't understand. No, then you just lost your audience. You want to draw them in and
right.
have them and to the point to where they can relate to what you're doing. And, hey, you got them. I know it's good if a guy from Great Britain and Australia are laughing at Lucretia, a story I wrote, or writing about little black leprechaun and all that. If I'm getting people out in Australia and Argentina and Spain, we're on the right track.
Wow. You know, like I said, I've read the book and I had to read it twice, and you know, it was where I had to get a visualization and then seeing the characters, seeing the individuals. You know, I know what you look like. So I can see you, but I'm trying to visualize what everybody else looks like, and the whole thing of being dropped off the bridge. I was visualizing that going on, and then the woman swimming, like, damn, these Negroes don't know how to kill nobody. So, you know,
right,
and her
right.
walking down the street like, yeah, last night they tried to kill me, but, you know, I'm still here, you know, everything good. You know,
right.
it's like, wow. And then when you shared about some folks who shared with you that they did not understand or had no clue about your experience. And that's the key thing. For me, that's the key thing because just like yourself, I know some white people who have, in fact, I remember years ago when I worked at a fast food and I had a zit, which some people call a pimple, right, on my
right.
face. And this one white person looked and said, ooh, is that a pimple? I said, yes. He said, I didn't know that it would be white. I said, what color did you think it was? Well, by you being black, I thought it would be brown. I'm like, really? She thought that me being a black man, that my pimple would be brown. So I guess if I pinch the pimple, it's going to be like a brown ooze out of it. I don't know.
Right.
But that's the ignorance
right.
that some folks have. And this is a young person, but come on now. But the thing is that
right.
you don't do any research and if there's things that's questionable, here you have, or these individuals, I should say, have a certain exact opinion, but they don't know.
Right.
Follow me?
Yeah.
They just
yeah,
have an exact feeling about, well, this must be what it is because this is what I was told, and so I'm going to believe what I was told, though I've never experienced it. I've never asked anybody of mm-hmm. color. I'm just
right.
going by what I was told from this group of people, meaning my family and my friends. So I like that you bring that out into the open and people are asking you and saying to you and have enough nerves to say, hey, I didn't know. Well, now
right.
you do.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. Various
yeah.
things.
Well, I mentioned
see,
the one story like
that are not, well, real quick. I
go
see
ahead, Mike,
there's some folks here. Yeah, there's some folks here on the board. I see that you're sitting back and relaxing and listening. I appreciate you listening to our conversation with our guest, Mr. Timonship, the author of the new book, My East St. Louis. If you have any questions or comments, hit the number one, and you can ask him any question, or if you have a comment, or you can go to www.blogtalkradio.com/TMGS, and you can post it if you don't want to talk. You can post it, and I'll read it for you. Back to you, Tommy.
Yes, there was there's a story in there called The Alley Dog. And a friend of mine said, I remember
that
a buddy of mine. What's that?
That was funny, but go ahead.
Well, The Alley Dog, people don't understand The Alley Dog. And I always talk to, hey, man, you know, they said, I went down the pound and got me a dog, and you know, the dog tore my house. I said, well, man, that's an alley dog. I said, man, what the hell is an alley dog? An alley dog is a dog that's been hit by about 5 or 6 cars, skin hanging off his body, flies flying around his head. You can feed him anything, pork and beans, tuna. Hell, you can give him an onion. He don't care. And he will guard your house. If a burglar break in, he'll bite him, but get about half a block and start foaming his mouth. I said, he said, man, my friend of mine told me, my pit bull will kill your alley dog. I said, yeah, my alley dog will tell you. I ain't got nothing to lose. You bite me, your ass is going to die. I'm damn near dead anyway. What does it matter? And a friend of mine said, he said, man, I never knew that about a dog. I said, man, you don't take a house cat to kill a rat. You got to get an alley cat to go with it.
Right.
You don't do that, right? So you don't take a dog that's been in the street, that's been drinking, you know, gutter water and everything, and put him in your house because he's going to tear that puppy up. And we started using, you know, a lot of the analogies, you know, from sayings that came, mm-hmm. From the alley dog or, you know, in East St. Louis, they would have the, that's back when brothers were stealing everything, you know, stealing batteries. Mm-hmm. You know, that I had a dude in there, Glenn, who was stealing gas out your car, you know, and you knew that Officer Crenshaw, you remember the gas wars? They were having
yeah.
gas wars, you know, and that's when they would,
now.
You know. What's that?
I said, I remember that too now when they used to have the little flag right. out there, red meaning we out of gas, green, yeah, you lucky we got
right. some. Right, and so they start, so in East St. Louis, you would see the skinny little brother with a green water hose and ashy lips walking around, right? And he would suck gas out your car. He'd steal your gas. You could fill your car up that night, and by morning, your car was on empty. So we had a brother named Glenn who was always stealing gas. And one day, you know, Glenn had just sucked some gas out of an old truck. And just as he got home, he got to his house, he lit a cigarette, and he blew up. And the old lady would say, uh-huh, boy, I knew you'd blow up one day. And sucking all that gas. Yeah, I told you, you need to get a job. You should have got a job. The boy's afro, they say his afro flew out, and his foot landed with his tennis shoe on somebody's house. Now that's what the story was. And after a while, if you think about it, somebody just sucking gas 4 or 5 days a week, he might have some fumes in him that way he end up blowing himself up. But that's what they were doing. I mean, yeah, this is true. You know, stealing batteries, you know, and everything. You could come outside, man, and I'd be sitting up on bricks, stripped to the bone. They steal him too.
I remember that. Yeah.
So I mentioned in the book about church, you know, and how, you know, and I probably have even told the story to you guys before, but, you know, it was always, you know, my dad taught Sunday school. You know, my Uncle Lawrence was the pastor, you know. My mother was in the choir. And, you know, I remember the day my brother James and I got baptized. Baptism traumatized me, you know, because they put you in your little blue, your T-shirt and your blue jeans, and they walk you in front of the whole church. Take me to the water. Say it, boy. And they march you right on up there, man. And my Uncle Lawrence would be a little, he's a stocky little man. And you get down. Now, my brother James went first. He said, oh, man, it's no big deal, man. He's just going to take you and then boom and bring you up. Well, you know, I walked down there and it seemed like my uncle got long-winded. We come here, then baptize this boy, name the Father and the Son. And before I knew it, he didn't throw me in the water, and then he got long-winded because I felt like I was down there for a week. Like, you do sucking bubbles, and I'm just like, hey. And when he finally let me up, man, I yelled out, Mama, and I shot out of the church, man. I couldn't wait to get up out of here, you know. Only way she got me back is because she threatened to beat me if I didn't go back into the church. But then, you know, my job, after I got baptized, they made me an usher. And my first job in the church, as I said in the book, and a friend of mine was asking me this story about Southern Baptist churches, you know, my first job was to go around and pick up all the wigs that were flying off women's heads that were getting the Holy Ghost in. And, you know, you had them same women every Sunday. Praise Jesus. Praise the Lord. And that wig would fly off. And the deacon said, boy, go over there and get Sister Williams' wig. And I'd go over and pick a wig up. Here you go, Sister Williams. Here your wig. Thank you, baby. And I had a magnet that I would pick up all the bobby pins. And I always thought that the most dangerous job in the church, I thought that, you know, that if you're going to be a deacon, man, you need to have a real good insurance policy, because them sisters were knocking them brothers out every weekend. Crazy. Crap. You know, and then you could throw your back out because, you know, they would lay them down. Remember how they go in that bloom, they lay down, oh, God, Lord, and they said, and, you know, when they be down there so long, you come by, you hear the deacon say, get her feet, you know, and that's all you hear, get her feet. And they pick her up by her feet and her arm and take her out of the church, you know. And my mother would be in the choir laughing. My mother would bust out laughing, man. It was so good. And my dad would be pissed. Oh, my God. My dad would be like, God damn it, bro. Stop this Latin shit. Especially when my Uncle Lawrence did the holy hop and fell out of the pulpit. He was jumping, God damn the Lord, and he missed that step. Bloom, and he rolled down, right? And my mother fell out, boy. I mean, you know. I mean, she just
but
busted out.
He popped back up, right? But he popped back up and not missed a beat, huh?
Didn't miss a beat. Oh, man. But, you know, that was, I mean, hey, you like they always say, you thought you were in there for a week. You'd be in church so long. They
wow.
did
right.
walks. They did church revivals. But, the, you know, and you even had Sister Farrell that would tell on you if she caught you buying ice cream with your church money that you were supposed to put in the church, the tithe, you know, and see you always had, boy, I'm going to tell your mama, y'all over there stealing your church money to go on that. That's God's money. You take that money and you put in the church shoes. Man, you knew about Tasty Freeze ice cream, man. You know, over there, man.
Right.
It's hot. You know, it's hot.
Well, you
and
know what?
Shoes.
But you know what time is? I remember times I would, you know, I would get money to put into the you know, getting Sunday school to put in, and I would put into my inside coat pocket. Now, granted, I would forget. I'm not lying. I would not think about it because, you know, in Sunday school, they didn't pass the plate. They just had the plate at the door, you know, like drop it in there. It's just like going to school. Just drop your, you know, whatever there. And I remember, like, three Sundays down the road, I reach into that pocket. I have, like, $5. I'd be like, what? What? Ooh, I didn't put into the plate.
So
that would happen. Yeah, and I was like, okay, so what do I do now? You know, I gave it back to my mom. Boy, take this to the church, you know, and I would do that, right? But going back to what you were saying, what you're saying about the pastor and everybody getting the Holy Ghost and everything, and that is so true. You deal with that and you see it. And as a kid, you'd be like, okay, you know. But I remember a pastor that I had here as an adult, not as a kid. I was a musician in the church. Janet know who I'm talking about. But anyway, I remember this pastor. And it used to kill me every time me and the keyboard player would look at each other and just kind of like, we wouldn't laugh out loud, but we just look at each other. And I would have to not laugh because every time we would play for the choir, he always says, amen, amen, great song. Love my magicians over here, the drummer and the keyboard player, the magicians. Not musicians. We were magicians. I'm like, what now? Who are we, Siegfried and Roy or what? I mean, I don't know, you know. We're magicians now. And then Barry, I'm not going to say his last name, he'd look over at me with that look on his face like, did you hear what he just said? He said magicians.
Right.
It was comical, but it was so much fun. Right. Do me a favor before we switch on, because we have to go into our second hour. The time is now 7:08. Please share, and thank you for staying with us into the second hour, because we do have to get into these other hot topics that's happening here in Atlanta, all over. Everybody's talking about this new thing that's happening in the state of Georgia. Please share with everyone your contact information and, of course, how we can get this new book, My East St. Louis. Great book, you guys.
Sure. Mike, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it, and you guys being on there. You can Time and Ship. You can go to my website, which is timeandship@weebly.com. as well as I'm at Time and Ship on Facebook, Time and Ship at Instagram, Time and Ship at Twitter, as well as you can all my comedy, stand-up, you can get also on YouTube. I have a Time and Ship YouTube channel, as well as you can get the book, My East St. Louis, on Amazon.com, as well as on Kindle. You can get also the book on Kindle as well. My comedy CD, Universal Brother, is on Spotify and CD Baby and iTunes.
Fantastic.
So, thank you so much, Mike,
thank you guys
for having me, man. This is great. It's, you know, to do look for it. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you so much. We really enjoy it. So you guys make sure, check it out. You can buy it. You can listen to it. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it on Kindle, as he just said to you. Please support my brother here, Mr. Time and Ship. I loved it. I enjoyed it. And it's one of those type of books you can always go back and read it over and over again. You know, it's not just for the laughs, but it's real stories, real history, and you'll enjoy it. Hey, you guys, we're going to do this. We're going to take a quick music break so we can all take a breather and come back. And we're going to talk about the shootings that recently happened in different areas because all over the United States. Why is this going on? Also, the new law that has been done here in Georgia. We're going to get into hot topics, and it's basically political and, sadly, what's happening here. But I want to hear your point of view. I want to hear what you think about what has happened and what happens moving forward. Your thoughts, all right? So with that being said, I'm going to go ahead and play a track from Lige and DOA. That's Elijah Baker and Derek Allen. the number one producer in the world right now, at least in my opinion. We'll be right back. This is Funk. Thank you for listening.
Hey, Deke. Oh, wait. Man, nobody want to do the Funk no more, man. But I ain't scared. Are you? Nah. We gonna hit him like this, Deke.
Welcome back to the TNTS, the Michael Gay Show, here on a nice Saturday here in the ATL. Thank you guys for listening. I appreciate the support for the show. That was Elijah Baker and Derek DOA Allen, known as DOA. That's Funk. Man, you guys, I mean, come on now. That takes you back to some James Brown and some Parliament Funkadelic. I mean, they just wrapped that all up in a sausage roll and just put it on the grill and said, here you go.
Right.
Oh, wow. Love that funk. And if you get a chance, check out the music video. Go to YouTube and check it out. What you guys think about that, though? Was that funky enough for you?
Oh, yeah, that was nice. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
That was very nice.
Yeah. It's a tribute. Nice.
I like the beat.
Yeah, if you get a chance, like I said, go ahead and pull it up. It's definitely available. And look at the video and how they took clips of, I mean, James Brown, George Clinton, who else? Prince, everybody. They just put all these music clips together in sync to the music, and it's just an awesome tribute to the Kings of Funk. All right, so let's go ahead and move forward. The time is now 7:16 Eastern Time. I want to get into this conversation about, I don't know, what should we go into, the shootings? Because it's like, it's not unheard of. We've dealt with them before. We've seen them before. We're being used to, we're used to it now. But now in this new thing about Asian hate, granted, there's hate of every nationality by some certain groups, and I want you guys to chime in on that. But now here's the attacks on people of that might be Japanese, Chinese, Korean, and everything. People are saying Donald Trump is the one who started it when he called it the Chinese flu. It's China's fault. They did this. Not everybody that is Asian is not Chinese, and I don't blame the Chinese for what happened. I don't. I can't. So we got that going on. And here comes a killing here in Atlanta. Here comes another killing in Colorado. And Colorado, I don't know what the – I'm going to say this. I don't know what the fuck is going on with you guys folks up there. Excuse me. But every few years, there's a murder. There's a mass murder in Colorado. There's people killing people in Colorado, mass murdering. What is going on? I mean, I understand that Denver is the mile high city and you don't have that much oxygen up there, but is that really affecting the brains? And I'm not trying to be funny about it. I'm just saying, what's going on, and how come every time there's certain mass murders, it's an excuse for the killer? Every time when it's a white individual, there's an excuse. Well, we're investigating to see if he had some mental problems. Hell, you should have known if he or she had a mental problem before they got to this point. You should have known. It didn't just all of a sudden pop up one day. Because in one day, this killer was able to buy a gun, and 6 days later, take the lives of innocent people. Now, I'm going to say this, and then I'm going to go ahead and let you guys chime in. When there's a killing in the black community, honestly, and we all know this, it's a personal thing. A drug dealer gets mad at another one coming over his turf. They know each other, right? They know, man, you coming in my turf and everything. It's a personal thing. A family killing, which I don't agree with it, but it's within a certain group of people, not just people who have no idea what the hell you mad about, what the hell you upset about. But instantly, the excuse is, oh, well, he had some personal issues, mental. You saw that shit years ago, and now years later we have to suffer the consequences. And he's allowed to go buy a gun. So let's address this whole situation now. Janet Davis, what's your thoughts about this situation with this whole thing with this Asian hate, because there's been African American hate for years?
Well, I know it was the Asian thing that happened in here in Atlanta, in the Atlanta area, but the one that was in Colorado, that wasn't Asian hate, was it?
No, that wasn't Asian hate. No, it was a guy who went into a grocery store and shot up folks, right? But they said his brother spoke up and said, well, I knew my brother had some mental issues. Well, if you knew it before this, how come you did not get him help?
Yes, that is so true. But what happened in Atlanta, I think a lot of, and in Colorado, I think a lot of this is aftermath of all the rhetoric that we have experienced over the 4 years of Trump, you know, saying the China virus and, you know, and always hollering it's Antifa or something else. And people became emboldened. And I actually believe what's been happening recently is just a follow-up from the insurrection that just took part January 6th, you know. So I think people need to really take sit back and take a good look at the gun laws and really this time try to do something that will keep people from just being able to go get a gun and just go out and kill people and then try to say, oh, well, I was upset or it's a mental thing. But when it's a black person, they normally put them underneath the jailhouse. It's not a mental thing.
Well, unfortunately, what they do when it's a black person, what they do, they investigate that black person. Well, the first thing is not investigating the crime. It's like, okay, I mean, this is my opinion, okay, for everybody that's listening. It's always where that individual who probably was killed by an officer, you know, which is normally what happens, and that's what has been happening over the years, and there's an outcry worldwide, not just here in the United States, but other countries see what's happening here, and they have marches and they have protests because it's not about just that black person. It's just about a person, you know, and so then that's how come you see this happen where people from other countries are looking at it where, you know what, if that can happen in the United States, that shit can happen right here where we live. So now, fast forward to what's happening now. I want to get Officer Crenshaw to chime in a moment, but I want our guest, Timon, to speak up on it, and then Officer Crenshaw, knowing how law enforcement works, to chime in second. So, Timon, go ahead. What's your thoughts about this?
Well, and a lot of this stuff is historical. I mean, because, you know, before Trump even got started, this was already there, okay? I mean,
right.
this whole rhetoric, and then the whole thing about, you know, you remember McVeigh blew up the FBI bill, you know. These guys have been, there's something going on, Mike, where white people believe that they're losing their freedom. That somebody, because fear is easy to sell. When they say, I don't have any white privilege. You don't? No. Okay. You didn't never have anything. We didn't create racism. White folks did. You created it. And now you're sitting there going, I can't believe they're doing this. Yes, you can. Because every time they come in office, somebody jumps on the bandwagon and starts the what? The fear tactics. They start telling you they're coming to take – what did Trump tell you? He said, hey, they're coming across the borders and they're going to take something from you. Well, guess what?
Yeah,
if you know the history – if you know the history of Central America and America, you will know that – the reason why them people come across that border is because our asses is over there screwing up their country. We control Central America. We do. Okay, they ain't coming over here because they want to. They'd love to be able to do whatever they're doing over there. But then it doesn't help when people say, oh, they're taking our jobs. Oh, they're doing this. No, they're not. I came to L.A. and I didn't have nothing. It didn't even cross my mind if somebody said that immigrant or that Mexican dude. But then again, when you sit up and go, well, wait a minute. This was Mexico at one time. They never did leave. I mean, they called it Los Angeles. It is called Santa Monica, Monterey.
Mm-hmm.
That's Spanish.
big Aurora.
Right. So, I mean, so when you look at, they're trying to find, you know, they say, oh, they're attacking Asians. They were lynching Asians back in the day. They've always had something against. That's why you had the internment camps back when they had that. And now, how long did that last? That's why they're so tight. But yet, they keep wanting to date them. You know, the white dude said, well, you know, I went over there and, you know, I have an addiction to sex. So I'm going to go, I'm going to shoot them because I can't control my addiction, and they're the problem. So you want to shoot them because they made you feel good?
And real quick, I want to elaborate on that just a little bit for folks that are listening.
Go ahead. I'm just saying. Yeah,
because actually you could do it, because here's what's coming out on both cases. What was the motive for it? The guy did visit like three different parlors here in Atlanta, and his answer was that, well, you know, I had an addiction to sex. Now, here's the question. Was it where he thought he was going to be sexually satisfied there and they denied him that? That we don't know yet. We don't know yet. They're not going to tell us until after the investigation. And depends on what they want to really share with us, right?
Right.
Because you can buy information to not be shared. See, you can do that. People do it all the time. So, but there has to be an answer to the whole thing. But as you were saying, here's this guy. He murders a particular group of people. I mean, they're saying right now they don't know if this is considered a hate crime. What do you think?
It's a hate crime.
I'm asking Tynan, what do you think? Is this cut clear hate crime or not in your mind?
Yeah, it is a hate crime because he went there because, you remember, you know, they always said, you know, that the Asian women were very flirtatious and, you know, you love me long time and all this stuff. And he said he had no control. So you shot six. The other two that he killed just happened to be there. He shot six Asian women, and he went to one, and then he drove to the other two and walked across the street to get the other one. So, and these were all places he frequented. So he knew these people, and he shot them. And he can't say that, you know, I did it for an addiction. Then you could have went and shot anybody, but you chose an Asian place,
mm-hmm.
and I slapped it with him. Yeah,
okay.
You're 21 years old.
Let me go
Come on, man.
Yeah, and he's still, you know, at 21, you're still a child. In my opinion, you're still young. I mean, right when I was 21, I'm old enough to go to a bar and buy me a drink. You know, as I got older, I realized that where, you know, I did some stupid shit at 21. Okay, so let me go over to a person who experienced this type of stuff. Officer Crenshaw, I know you have some information and some thoughts about this whole situation. Your mic
is
open, sir.
Yes, my prayers and condolences go out to all the families involved. They also had another mass shooting in West Virginia, day before yesterday, where eight people
right.
were killed. But this is – their mindset is kind of the mindset that I developed when I was working on the streets and when I trained young officers. I would always tell them you have to outsmart the smart, which means you have to think ahead. Their mindset on that is trying to outsmart the smart being the law. If I
right.
go forward right after and say – I had a sex addiction, you're immediately going to set me up for some type of evaluation. If my family member comes forward and says, oh, he has psychological issues, it's not that why didn't they get him help, because at a certain age, you know, he can walk right out of the center on his own. They can take him there. He can walk out. They can't force him to stay anymore.
True.
But that's the phrase
that they use to avoid the death penalty for what they've done. They try to outsmart the smart. I'll go to prison. I'll unite with my Aryan gang brothers, but I'm not going to be killed. You're not going to gas me or electrocute me. They try to outsmart the smart with the thoughts already ahead.
Mm-hmm.
You look back at the Asian shootings. Yes, it's a hate crime. But if they come right out and say that in the beginning, then the defense has a chance to try to pull up all they can to rebut it. So you say,
right.
Well, I'm not sure it's a hate crime right now, and you work on it. It's evident it's a hate crime. Because if he had a sex addiction, why did he only go to Asian massage parlors?
Mm-hmm.
He could have went down on what they used to call, and anybody listening probably know what Stewart Avenue is. It's Metropolitan Parkway now in Atlanta. It's the whole strip. He could have went down there. He could have went anywhere and got tried to hurt
his
somebody
sexual,
if that's what his...
Right. Got his sexual desires. Right. I follow you. Right. In other words,
exactly.
He could have bought a prostitute instead of going to an established business or a business. And that's the thing, and I want you to finish, though, but was I have to look at it in a sense of, okay, were these businesses, you know, you got to investigate not just the killer, but the businesses, okay, and not make an excuse for him. Don't get me wrong. They didn't deserve to be killed, but... Because he went to three different ones, right? So, and he frequented them. Was there something going on there or not? Is that what needs to be answered, in my opinion?
Well, not even that, Mike, because if I got a sex addiction and I'm upset because I can't get rid of that addiction,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's just me by myself. I'm alone. I'm not trying to draw attention to myself.
Mm-hmm.
What he did was an attention grabber, and he knew it. Almost as if he was doing it as part of whatever group, if he belongs to one, trying to acknowledge where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh,
mm-hmm.
yeah, we can go here and do this. And let you know we coming for you. This is how we're going to do it.
Mm-hmm. But you understand my point is that where, you know, a massage parlor, and there has been stories, and I definitely don't want anybody to take what I'm saying wrong. All right, don't do that. I'm looking at where there has been, in all due respect, there has been businesses who were definitely working in the wrong side of the law. There's been strip clubs here where, if you remember, there was one that used to be here in Georgia up on Canton Highway. It was a strip club, which is long gone now. It was major on the news of where the dancers there were doing sexual favors for the patrons, right? So
right.
The thing is that we're, as they investigate this murder of the individuals of the massage parlor, I'm not saying that they were doing extra favors, but I'm pretty sure they're going to take a look at it. If that's his excuse and that's his story, of course, the detectives have to look at this and see, is there any history of these locations, right? As you as an officer, you know that, you know, go ahead.
But they will. They will investigate that. They will try to find
right.
all of that that might be there. But
mm-hmm.
just like
I may not be
say,
there. Right.
Even though prostitution is wrong and it's a violation of the law, it's
mm-hmm.
a victimless crime. It is
true.
A victimless crime unless you're getting robbed by the girl or getting set up by the girl or something of that nature. Because nobody's forcing you to go out and offer your money for a piece of ass.
There you go.
My lane.
That's true.
And
no, you ain't gonna be excused. This is a rated R. I'm sorry. This is a rated R show. You can say whatever you want to say, but go ahead.
Right. So if you want a happy ending, you know which ones to go to. You know how to play up to it, what to offer. You know, when we would go in those clubs, plain clothes undercover, they would spot us in a damn heartbeat. You know, knew we were cops. You know, they knew
y'all
we
didn't
were cops.
Right, huh?
You know.
your composure just didn't look right.
Right. And even we had guys that looked like they had, you know, been drinking for 5 days straight, strung out, would go up in there. They're not stupid. So he had to be a regular of that. You know, everything is planned out. Just like the attack in D.C., that was planned out ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
This is
now, let me go
opener.
To this. The whole thing, okay, so I want to change gears because I don't want to lose time. And we got to, okay, so we're going to talk about a lot of this, and I want to go into some other things and just get you guys' point of view because a lot of shit has happened in a matter of 2 weeks, or better yet, a week. So as we talk about the guy that murdered the people here in Atlanta, now look at Colorado, which I brought that up. Colorado, almost every 5 years or so or less, comes up with something of another killing. Here comes another one in a grocery store. What's your thoughts about that? What's going on?
Well, you know, they just had they don't know exactly what it was here in Atlanta. It was foiled because the guy came in, he had body armor, he had a ski mask, he had rifles, he had handguns. And somebody saw him changing clothes in the bathroom and called the police. So they were able to get there before anything happened. That guy was black.
Okay.
Now
he was black.
You can you
the
can
guy
walk
in Colorado
with a long rifle.
No, the guy in the Atlanta.
First Amendment right. You can walk around with a long rifle on your back. You can walk around mm-hmm. with a pistol on your hip as long as it's in a holster. The police
okay.
don't have a right to confront you unless you're doing something suspicious or dangerous that would have them approach you. You take a white guy in the same situation, because we had one when I was working at Lowe's, that came in with a rifle strapped across his back.
Yeah, I've seen that. I remember him.
And we just, you know, me and one of the managers, we just talked to him and said, look, we know you have the right to carry it, but it's intimidating. You
correct.
Know, we want your business, you know, but we also want everybody else's business. So is there any way you can leave it in the car or whatever you can do? We're not telling you you have to leave. We're just saying that if you're in here, we're going to be not trying to make you nervous, but we're going to be walking with you so that people don't feel afraid.
Correct. Damn good
point. Now, that was the white guy. The black guy, they immediately called the police on.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always wanted to know. You're in the suburbs. You know, you ain't living in the woods. And most guys live in the woods, got a rifle, maybe a handgun, even 44, maybe a 357 Magnum, you know. But they're in the woods, you know. Why do you need an AK-47 or a AR-15 in the suburbs? Gang members don't even walk around with their stuff like that. You got
right.
gangs you got guys that are gang members. You hear about them, but you don't ever see them walking around. Can you imagine if gang members were able to walk around like that? They'd lock them all up.
You know, that's a good question because, you know what? I'm going to say this. That's a damn good freaking question because you don't see gang members now, you just said, going to a Walmart or a movie theater and just shooting up the whole damn place. You don't see that. As I said earlier, it's a one-on-one personal thing among most individuals, right? These people come out of nowhere that we don't know nothing about. So far, they have not even shown where any of these folks who have done these mass shootings were part of a gang at all.
No.
At all. Most of them who've done these shootings are just like just lone wolves. And they're trying to figure out why did they do it. Oh, here's the family saying this, and which are, you know, I'm tired of repeating myself. A family member says, well, if they had a issue of mental shit. Okay, I don't want to hear that. If you knew it, you should have said it. But the point I'm saying is this. You don't need a long, or you don't need an AK-47. You don't need all that to go shopping for some damn groceries. No. Who are you afraid of? Who's after you?
Well, you know what will happen, Mike? The same thing that happened with that white kid that was walking down the street with that rifle, supposedly came across county lines to guard somebody's property, and during the march or the rally, and got ran off. You know, he ended up shooting and killing two people, and seriously, one.
Right.
You know, but he was getting ready to get his ass.
Yeah.
They was fixing to hand him his right. ass, you know, and if they really wanted to, they could have, and took
right.
his gun from him, which is what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You're walking with
I'm sorry, his last name wasn't White House. Right, his last name was not White House. It's something House. I'm trying to – Rittenhouse, I think, is his last name.
Yeah, Kyle Rittenhouse.
Yeah. Right,
and
that's what it is.
I mean, I'm telling you, that you want to get into a major argument, Mike, bring that dude up. You know how many people are defending what that kid did? Now, mind you, I've been dealing with gangbangers for over 30 years.
He got over $1 million of support. People have – they had a GoFundMe and got $1 million plus, and the numbers are still going – for his defense,
right?
For him, and he didn't just kill. He didn't kill a black person. He killed other folks.
He killed white folks. But I'm saying, Mike, he left town. This dude crossed state lines. You had guys at my. I was at my lounge. I said, man, I got to stop talking to you, because y'all about to piss me the hell off. Because you're sitting up here telling me. I said, y'all don't. I don't ever see y'all standing in line, talking for the gang members. This boy.
Yep.
Somebody gave a 17-year-old kid nothing, and you know this, Officer Crenshaw.
His mama and daddy. It's not somebody. No, his mama and daddy. His mama drove him over there, dropped him off, and that was it. His mama drove him over state line, right?
But nothing good comes with a 17-year-old with an AR-15. Now, the killer elite was the fact that he walked right past police with that gun strapped to him after he just shot three people.
And they did not stop their vehicles, right.
No.
They're in armored. But no, what I'm saying is this. He walked right there in front of them. The video's there, okay? And I'm going to let you finish, but the video's there. Had that been me or you walking with...
shot him dead.
Okay. Would have got on the PA, stop, lay on the ground. I would have got the same damn instructions if I was just being pulled over for a stoplight infraction.
Mike, you wouldn't have
right?
got that far. They'd have shot
if I got out of my car. No, I'm saying if I would have got out of my car, just visualize just like I did what I shared with you. Had they pulled me over here in Georgia and I'm driving and I get out the car, they would have been like, stop, lay on the ground. This guy is walking with a weapon with his hands up. Now, he did put his hands up. They drove right past him and lay on the ground. But, you know, as a person who's driving, and you see this person walking with a weapon hanging over their shoulders with their hands up, automatically I would have been like, but see, here's the thing. Keep in mind, they knew who the fuck he was because he was there getting water from them before they went ahead and approached the crowd.
Right.
See?
And they said, now,
that's
the
thing that people forget.
He was protecting. But, Mike,
He's part of the crew.
But, Mike, the story was he was helping someone protect their property. Okay?
Right.
And they said, look, everybody knows that all of the Proud Boys and all of the little white nationalist groups was hanging, connecting with Black Lives Matter and busting windows and stuff so they could blame Black Lives Matter. That was all set up. Them dudes was paid to be there.
Yeah.
To make bad Black Lives Matter look bad. And so that
look
whole
bad.
Thing, to set that up. And say, and so they said, "Hey, I'm you know, he's there to protect and everything." And I'm saying to, I'm telling you, he was able to go home. They said, "Ty, he turned himself in." Yeah, because he's all over the television.
Yep.
Where was he going to go? He crossed state line with an AR-15 and committed murder.
And crossed back over state line, and crossed back over state line with his AR-15, and was taken into custody without any problem, like many
and
do.
And I said, "Y'all don't see nothing wrong with this." And I said, "That's," I said, "and y'all the problem." And the reason why America is messed up today is because y'all
the $1 million that they raised on GoFundMe. He ain't going to get a chance to even pay his attorneys because I hope the families file their lawsuits before it go to trial and suck all that money.
Right. And guess who did it?
First of all,
Mike, do you know the people where they gave the money?
I'm sorry. What were you saying, sir?
I said, did you know who the people were who gave him the money?
Who?
My Pillow guy. And Ricky Schroeder, the actor, they're the ones
Ricky
who put up the $1 million
right.
bucks. And my pillow guy, they did it.
So my fellow, if my pillow guy and Ricky Schroeder are listening, I have to make this kind of funny. I got to tell you guys something, okay? You too.
You must be out your goddamn mind.
Okay, so that didn't come through. But anyway, right, I knew about that. The My Pillow guy, and a lot of folks now are saying, don't deal with him. Don't buy his product. Shit, I ain't bought a My Pillow. I don't need that. You know, and then for him to be able to go.
He exposed himself anyway. They ain't got to worry about
him.
He exposed himself.
Yeah. Many of them are exposing themselves. And the things that were, look, you guys, we're down to 10 minutes, and we're going to talk about this a little bit more next week. I definitely want to do another hour of the things that I didn't get to, including the My Pillow guy. When, you know, and I want to do this, and Janet, you and I will talk about it, when companies that sell products like this and try to get us to buy their stuff, but then them being, you know, so much against what's right.
Right.
This is not right. It's not right. I'm not going to buy your product, and you were supporting something that's negative in our country when you are openly saying. A lot of negative things about individuals of color, you know. Still, again, I see your ass on television. Shame on the network that advertises your product. Okay? Shame on the networks that advertise your product. I understand that you're paying them, but the thing is that what's wrong is wrong.
Mike,
go
I
ahead,
have to
Oscar,
say one thing.
Sure.
With all what we're talking about right now and jumping back to time and sitcom, it's great because it's going to show where we came from and the fact that you never forget where you come from.
Right.
You might try to leave
right.
where you come from, but never forget. So
right.
many people have forgotten, and they're buying those products, and they're doing all of this stuff, and they're going up and standing next to the president, Trump, and saying, yeah, I'm for him, and, you know, but you forgot where you came from.
Mm-hmm.
You forgot what your parents taught you and how they raised you.
Right. Good point. I want to go ahead and let the lady of the house go ahead and chime in, and then time in, I'm going to let you close it out.
Okay.
Well, I'm waiting for her to chime in. Janet, are you good?
I don't have any comments.
Okay.
You don't?
All right, so Timon, thank you so much for being our guest in the first hour and staying with us in the second hour. I appreciate it. And next week, we definitely have to follow up on these things because these topics, these situations are always going to be there. So I definitely want to do that. But, you know, of course, I definitely want to do what I look at us being. We are a variety
right.
show. So I'm thankful and
right.
blessed to have you as a guest to come on and share your new book. Share that again, but final comments come to you.
Uh-huh.
Go ahead, sir.
Well, you know, Mike, this is what I've been talking about to friends and everybody. You know, we have a point in our society right now where, I mean, and the pandemic really exposed all of it. It showed inequality. It showed how people, if you looked at rich and poor, if you looked at who was getting the vaccine, who wasn't, it showed selfishness. It showed, you know, where we had humanity and where we don't have humanity, where it exposed the racial tension, you know, that came out of all of this. And definitely racial issues because what they say, it was the people of color who are having most of the problems getting vaccines, getting good medical. You got the homeless problem. Like L.A. is, I don't know how y'all homeless is in Atlanta, but the homeless in L.A. is, man, Mike, this looks like third world country in certain areas of L.A. Okay, especially if you're going to downtown. You know,
mm-hmm.
and so these things are coming out. That's why Biden was trying to do what he's doing. Like all the Republicans say, oh, no, we're not voting for that. And I say, turn your check in. But guess who was voting for it, who did want it? The Republican people wanted it. The politicians probably want it. But them Republicans are hurting just like anybody else. I don't know. We still don't know why Republicans vote the way that they vote. When they're not voting in your interest. Yeah, you can say Democrats may raise your taxes. But look what happened in Texas when people were dying in their beds, freezing to death because a governor, they didn't want you to be part of the government utilities. They wanted you to, we're going to do it our way. Well, we let you do it your way, and you got an old man freezing to death in his easy chair. He probably went to that easy chair every day. Who would have thought he'd end up dead and it's frozen? Or 11-year-old boy frozen to death in his bed. This is 2021. We are
right.
We're supposed to be a superpower. We're supposed to have all this great stuff. But the hypocrisy keeps getting exposing the lies and what truly is. They say, oh, the American dream. What is that? That's a slogan. Unless you create it on your own. Because if you try to say like they thought it was, that doesn't even exist anymore. And this pandemic showed where it was and how people are struggling. If you go, like, we got the 99-cent store, Mike. You got Range Rovers and Mercedes pulled up in front of the 99-cent store.
Right. And I'm sorry, I gotta intervene with you because I'm down to just 4 minutes. And so,
go ahead, Mike.
Do us
a
favor again. Go ahead and share your contact information before we have to get out of here because Blog Talk don't play. They will shut your ass down if you go beyond your time frame.
Yeah. So
please go ahead and share that with me.
Time and Ship at Wembley.com is my website. I'm on Twitter, Time and Ship at Twitter, Time and Ship at Instagram, Time and Ship at Facebook. I'm also Time and Ship on LinkedIn. You can get my book, My East St. Louis, on Amazon.com, as well as my comedy CD, Universal Brother, is also on CD Baby and Spotify. Oh, and you can get the book on Kindle also.
Right. That's definitely available on Kindle. Okay, we got 3 minutes left, you guys. I want to thank all my co-hosts, Janet Davis, Officer Crenshaw, well, Time and Ship, who's always a guest co-host, but being our guest this evening, I really do appreciate it. All the TMGS family, Myrtle Smith, Cotton Campbell, thank you for chiming in. And all of you who are listening and to the live stream on the internet, also watching or listening, I truly appreciate you guys. We're going to come back with some of these conversations and a lot of different topics and subjects and guests, as we always do on the Variety Show, the Michael Gay Show, every Saturday here on the Michael Gay Network. God bless you guys. Enjoy the rest of your weekend and have an amazing week coming. We got to get out of here. God bless. Talk to you soon. Peace.
All right. Peace.
Hey, Mike.